This episode of Voices of the Elephant is sponsored by DayCamp for Developers. Listen for a special offer at the end of this podcast. Welcome to the Voices of the Elephant podcast. Each episode of Voices of the Elephant brings you an interview with a member of the PHP community. From project leaders to user group organizers, we talk to the people that are helping make the PHP community special. Hi, we're here today with Ian Barber. Ian and I go back to my days at iBuildings, and I was working in the Netherlands office. Ian was working in the UK office. And Ian, when I think back about our time that we spent together, I remember that you were doing an awful lot of project management and on some very interesting projects too. So today I've got three questions for you that all center around project management. And the first question is project management different when you're working with PHP and related technologies as opposed to traditional desktop software development?
Yeah, sure. I think that actually it is quite different. But the reason that it's different is not just because of PHP. It's really because of the web and the way that we release software and the way that we actually look at projects. With traditional desktop software development, a lot of the time you're working on a project for a while. It ends with a release where the program is actually going to be printed and put in boxes and shipped to stores. And even now with downloads, you find that there is a point you hit and then you ship the software and that's it. Well, online, a lot of the time, we're pushing software much, much more regularly. I mean, for all the way from people like Facebook and Flickr that can do multiple releases per day. And that really changes the dynamic of how you actually need to plan what's going to go into a release, what's the best thing to do, and what people should be building. And it changes how you manage that project, because a lot of the time, the project has no end. When you're dealing with a website that is a core part of your business, but not what your business necessarily does. I mean, if you sell things online, it's people buying those products. That's what they want to do. The website is just the tool that they use to do that. So that's never really going to be done. It's always going to be evolving and changing to fit the demands of the market and people that want to use it. I think the other thing that changes with the web is that often you're not building something which you will directly get paid for. Now, when we worked together, most of the projects that we'd be involved with were clients coming to us and asking us to build something. But in terms of what they were having them built for, most of the time they weren't going to get paid directly from owning that website, from releasing that website. Now, there are some cases where it happens with subscription payments maybe, but most of the time you're selling advertising or you're selling other products via the website. So the revenue isn't directly related to the code that you're building. It's related to the thing that your code allows you to do. So I think that those both have a big effect. The other thing that you tend to get with traditional software is that because contact with the users is quite distinct, you only get it after the software has been released and then fewer channels, people have a strong idea when they're building the software of what they want. So if you're building, you know, a photo editing app, you're going to really decide a lot of what goes into that photo editing app internally. You're going to have people that will use it, and a lot of that feature and client information is kind of built in. But most of the time when you're dealing with web projects, the people that are asking you to build it are not really the end users of the project. They're usually people that work at the company. So they may not be the target market, the target audience of the project. So it's a couple of steps removed a lot of the time in actually determining what's a good feature. But there's problems that we don't have. In the web world, we have maybe a few browsers to test against, but we don't have this ginormous matrix of hardware and software combinations that you have to deal with if you're looking at application development. If you have to worry about what kind of video card people have got, that can make life incredibly difficult. And that's something we just do not have to deal with in web development. We normally have quite good control over the platform that we're deploying to and reasonably good confidence over a limited range of browsers that people are going to interact with it in.
Very good. Some of those points I had not even considered. So thank you. That's a great answer. Question number two. You've managed projects with remote developers. What was the hardest problem you had to face with developers that are remote, and how did you overcome it?
I think that the hardest problem and most of the problems with remote developers come down to communication. And the really hard problem, the really hard problems I've had have not been communication between sort of myself and team members, but between different team members. Because a lot of the time that's happening in other channels. It's happening in a chat, or it's happening in direct messaging between people, or emails that you don't necessarily see. And that can make life very, very difficult. Text is a very imprecise medium, and people with very slightly different styles of writing can really communicate very, very poorly over email, over instant messaging and Skype and things like that. Now, even if the team do have a stand-up or a daily call to discuss things, they're usually relatively short and relatively focused. So you don't get a lot of that time for team members to understand how each other communicate and to develop that trust, which can make life very, very difficult. I think the way that I found that helps deal with some of these problems are things like establishing some rules for communication and availability. So if you have a problem where people are often not available or not being able to do something at a certain time, then have a rule that, okay, you will message them on Skype. If you need an answer, then phone them. Make sure everyone else has each other's mobile numbers. When there are conflicts or confusions or things that just don't seem to be going anywhere in a discussion, then go to a voice chat. People are often a lot more effective at resolving differences, whether they be technical differences or other problems in a project, via a voice communication, because you've just got that extra nuance in there. And if you're dealing with someone that is having a problem with another team member, then remember to actually listen to them and kind of go with them a little bit in understanding that they are having a problem, something that's been frustrating for them, and then bring them forward towards a solution rather than just saying get on with it or trying to discourage them from actually voicing concerns about other team members at all. One of the things that I can really help bring a team together and actually get this kind of shared technical culture are things like code reviews. There's a lot of good tools out available for it these days, things like Crucible on the Atlassian stack or Review Board. And they're great. They just give people a chance to look at each other's code and to feedback in a fairly non-conflict inspiring manner. It's pretty gentle stuff, and it means that everyone gets a chance to see the code. Everyone gets a chance to see how each other are working. And those kind of shared standards beyond just simple coding standards, but shared standards for the project can be built up. And these are also really important to foster a culture of people caring about issues they find. So there's a real problem with almost any team if someone finds a problem in the code, but it's not the bit they're dealing with. And so they just go, that's terrible, or may have a little laugh about it and then move on and ignore it. But it's not their problem. Now, in a team that's co-located, they might have said, is this your code? Is this crazy thing? Or they might have showed it to someone else because it was amusing. So you get some shared knowledge of these nasty little bits. When the remote teams, where they aren't going to have that direct communication between each other, you might find those issues slip by. And those can be the ones that really come back to bite you later on. So having a culture of people looking at the code, and if they find an issue, then, all right, get that in the bug tracker, or flag that to the rest of the channel, or in some way communicate that you found something you don't think is very good, even if right now you're not going to be able to have time to fix it, is really, really helpful in promoting shared ownership of the code.
Excellent. Great advice. Okay, third and final question. What's the best advice you have for project managers having to balance a customer's wants with the reality of what a team can reasonably deliver?
Yeah, I mean, that's the tricky problem with almost any project, where on one side you've got someone that doesn't necessarily understand the technical process. And that is something that, particularly in agency work, you get a lot, because they wouldn't have hired you if they knew everything they were doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they understood all this stuff, they just simply wouldn't have hired you. So I think that you've got to involve the customer as much as you can. And that is something that doesn't always work. You can't always get as much time off the customer as you need. So you have to just make it as easy as them and as low impact them to get in there. So make sure that they are on the staging area so that they can see the sites, they can use things. Make sure that you get the team and yourself demoing the code to them as regularly as possible, and making sure that they are seeing the site and they are feeling involved with the site as you develop it. When you hit a point of needing changes, or them wanting tweaks, or there being issues that have come up, then try and put a price on those changes. Try and put a price on, okay, we're not going to say exactly how long this will take, but Here's another change we did previously. It kind of cost about this much in time, which works out to about this much in money, so that they get a feeling for how much re-steering the project actually hits things, and try and put in points where they can do it cheaply. So if you're using an agile process, you kind of got built-in points where you could review and change tack without really costing a lot extra on the project. Mm-hmm. Bugs are a really tricky part in that you want to share the effects of them in a lot of ways. It doesn't want to be a situation where, from the project manager's part, they're having to deal with every issue that comes up out of the sort of time they have available, because it can be very difficult to be hitting feature sets if you know that you're going to have to deliver it 100% bug-free in the budget you've got. So try and share impact of bugs with the customer and get them to accept that there is a reasonable chance there will be issues. And those issues, a lot of the times, aren't even technical problems. They're just misunderstandings or lack of a shared vision between the customer team and the development team. And make sure that customers have an idea of what their minimum set of features that they can launch with are. And that's often very, very different to what the developer thinks. A lot of the time, from a development point of view, we look at something and we go, well, it does this, it does X, and you can't launch without X. But in fact, it may be that from the customer's point of view, some bit of flash, some pretty thing that you didn't think was very important is actually really, really important to them, because it's going to drive engagement or some other value that's maybe not so easy to measure and that technical people don't necessarily always immediately see. So get a shared agreement with the customer over what is the minimum set, and then focus on driving that minimum set first before adding everything else on, because that way they're going to have a working site, they're going to have something that they can have a much better mental grasp of, and it's going to be a lot easier to merge their ideas and the limits of the team moving forward.
Excellent. Thank you, Ian. Appreciate it. Real quick, no problem. What's your local user group?
My local user group is the PHP London user group. It's the first Thursday of every month.
And what's the URL for it?
That is phplondon.org.
Okay. Ian, I appreciate your time today, and really, thank you for everything that you do for the PHP community.
No problem. Nice talking to you, Cal.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Voices of the Elephant. This podcast is copyright 2011 EICC Incorporated, and all rights are reserved. For more information on the podcast, and to nominate someone to be interviewed, visit the website voicesoftheelephant.com. Elephant is, of course, spelled ELEPHPANT. Day Camp for Developers is a one-day, technology-agnostic online training camp for web developers. We cover the topics that you won't find at any other conference at a price that every developer can afford. Visit our website today, daycamp4developers.com, and reserve your seat for the next class. As a listener of Voices of the Elephant, use the discount code VOTE to save $10 off your ticket. Day Camp for Developers. Invest a day in your career.